Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend edition, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. On this weekend show, we're sticking with a couple generalists that we feature on the show on about a monthly basis to get a more rounded look at these markets, at certain sectors, and at the commodities sector. We are kicking off this show with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Rick writes the institutional newsletter called Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. That is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retail and individual side, Rick writes in the No Trader, a piece called 7-Eleven, where he picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the S&P. And also has just started up this year the Daily Tip Sheet, where Rick sends out something every week, just recapping his thoughts on the markets. Rick, let's start off with the U.S. equity markets. Bit choppier, let's say, for these markets. Some of that upward momentum has definitely waned over the last about week or two, but the markets aren't falling out of bed here. So give us some clarity, Rick, on how you're seeing these markets, the S&P in particular, please.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, the market is at least consolidating. We haven't seen that since kind of April, May. So after the good rally in June and July, we are finally seeing, again, some consolidation. Most of it really triggered by higher interest rates and to perhaps a lesser degree, the U.S. debt downgrade by Fitch that took place last week. And that's really kind of been what's at least given finally some reason to prior longs to take some profits. And of course, some new trading shorts are coming in, but you are seeing some profit taking coming in off of that. And it makes sense after the run this has had. There are several upside exhaustion signals in place that we use from a variety of models. Timing models, for instance, from Tom DeMark suggests some upside exhaustion. Prior targets have been hit up and in around this level. So no surprise. And, we've cautioned our clients that first putting on new longs on names that have rallied significantly right now come with the highest risk of drawdown than you've seen in the entire rally. And that's already been evident if you take a look at some of the moves in big cap tech, some of the high flyers, let's say the FANG type names, if you want to, you can add the AI names into that. They are seeing some profit taking, and to me, rightly so, given the run that they've had, it does make sense to take some profits in them. Some of the valuations have gotten very stretched, and historically, even in the best of growth names, you can't typically hold on to 60 times earnings for very long, especially if there's a catalyst for the market to stop the rally. So it doesn't mean we have to have any significant sell-off. I'm not playing for one yet. I do think the S&P, which is trading right near 4,500, still has the chance to trade down to 4,300 to 4,200. And there I'd be a more willing buyer than I am now. And even, today's Thursday, even today's rally has faded to some extent, and even though the S&P is up about 30 points, that's 20 off its high. So we are seeing still some selling into this general range, and I have no qualms with telling people to book some profits up here. If you find people willing to be the buyer to your selling, and you've made some very handy profits over the last 6 months, why not take some? We're still in an unsure environment. And despite the fact that more and more people interviewed in the media have turned bullish, that doesn't necessarily mean that the market still has more to go. There's plenty of strategists on the street who have missed the entire move up, who are essentially forced to to join the bullish camp. And that's the type thing that me as a counter trend strategist and somebody who takes the approach that identifying the turns of the market are going to give you far more profit over time than playing the simple trend will. In other words, being positioned properly at a turn will do you better than simply just buying within a trend. On an absolute basis, you can make money if you buy in an uptrend and the uptrend continues, but you're not likely going to outperform a benchmark. And for instance, that 7-Eleven report that you mentioned when you were introducing me, the whole goal of that report is to outperform the S&P. We now have officially a 3-year track record doing this going back to August 1st, 2020. So on July 31st, we finished our 3 years. And in the 3 years, by picking no more than 7 of the 11 spider macro sector ETFs to be in each month, I have outperformed the S&P by 14.29 percentage points above what the S&P gave you in that same time. So dramatic outperformance by simply, well, it's not so simple doing, but the idea is simple. Be in the right sectors at the right time. And I have proven that you can do that. And that's where we come up with the 14.29% extra percent above what the S&P returned during the same time. And in general, when you have more people telling you that they're bullish and throwing in the bearish towel after the run we've had, I don't mind at all taking some profits up here.
Well, Rick, I think you bring up a great point there about being invested in some of the sectors near the turn or as close to the turn as people can get versus waiting until it's so obvious that people are piling in maybe towards the end of a move. This is a very difficult concept for any investor or trader to get their head around. So I'd love to maybe dive under the hood as to how you identify when those turns are in place. Is it just the behavioral psychology side of things? Is it the technical analysis? Is it when you see PE ratios in NVIDIA of 222, which is way beyond 60. Some of these things are valued up into the stratosphere. How do you identify when something is overcooked or undercooked to be able to get in near the turn and catch most of the move as opposed to chasing the move?
So the process, Chad, includes, I'd say, the basic different categories strategy one can employ. And what we do is, and I say we, it's me, what I do is combine multiple strategies. So for instance, yes, we look at fundamentals in the marketplace and of the sectors. I have access to what I believe is the best quant model on the street. And I use the quant model's input on the different sectors. I use technicals. I use market timing, actually more than even technicals. That's 4. And the 5th is the behavioral side that you mentioned. And that's one of the, I'd say the timing side and the behavioral side is where I have a real edge over most people who play this game. Because, look, a lot of people can, you know, have the basic understanding of how to read a chart. So if you have a basic understanding, and any portfolio manager or team can do that, the fundamentals you can get access to. Quant, there's lots of quant models out there. I happen to really be partial to the quant model I use. But then there's the market timing side. And in my 42-year career on the street, I have always been known as one of the best market timers out there. So being able to time when to exit and enter sectors generally in a counter trend manner is how I can be positioned for a move to come before everybody else jumps on board. And so, for instance, something like energy, the street has been long the and partial to the energy sector for at least a year now. I mean, it's outperformed since the summer of 21. But it has been outperforming, but in January this year, but it's the worst performing sector this year. And we cut a very overweight position in January and February and March down to ultimately equal weight. So I kept it as one of the seven names in the portfolio, but I had cut it down until June 1st, when I, for the first time this year, upped exposure and upped more on July 1st. So basically, if you were to look at that, if you were to look at a performance chart of, let's say, XLE, the energy, the Spider Energy ETF, divided by the S&P 500, or the SPY, the ticker symbol SPY, you would have seen this peaked in January, sold off until June, and then in June started outperforming again. So I lightened exposure at the beginning of the year. I put more exposure back on in June and July. That's the type thing of understanding and being able to combine multiple research avenues along with knowing how overweight the street had been in energy. And of course, it was last year's best performing sector, that the likelihood was high that because of the things that we had seen, there was likely going to be some heavy profit taking there that were going to catch people on the wrong side. So as they finally started selling out mid-year, that's when we started coming back into it. So it's really, it's a game. Part of this chat is a mental game of outfoxing other people who play the same game. And it's understanding, I will tell you, that as a known expert in behavioral finance theory, and you know, I was the person that NYU came to 15 years ago to create their whole behavioral finance program and to teach the core course in it, I have long been able to figure out how to take the concepts, the very academic concepts of behavioral finance theory, and actually apply them to the market. And I think that's where I have the real edge, combined with understanding some of the more sophisticated timing models out there and how to properly use them to give me that edge to be able to outperform. We know that very few people over time outperform the S&P. Traditionally on the street, it was known to be about 1 in 7 portfolio managers could outperform over time. A year ago, Standard & Poor's came out with a study that said over the long term, you're talking about 2% or less of portfolio managers can outperform. So we have a 3-year track record. So it's not long term, but it's not like somebody saying, hey, I beat the market over the last 3 months, right? It's a full 36-month track record of significant outperformance. So to get to 14.29% after 3 years, you know, you're talking in the neighborhoods of 4.75% a year of outperformance. That's almost unheard of with any consistency.
Yeah, well done, Rick. We've been following along with what you've been doing, and it has been impressive. You have been playing the swings and riding a few waves for the markets in a number of different sectors. So since you are in kind of a profit-taking mode for the broad averages, are there any sectors out there, anywhere that you're rotating money to, or is it more a defensive play with the profits that you're taking?
So I don't want to go into the seven names that, you know, the seven sectors that we currently have in the portfolio, but I can tell you recently I added industrials on the pullback. I did get out of staples recently. And the good thing is when I do a sector change, it's not too often that we change sectors. But when I do a sector change, the intent is that it's good for at least 3 to 6 months. Now, if something dramatically changes from what I thought would happen, then, you know, I'll alter it at the next month. But generally, if I pull something out, I'm pulling it out because I don't think over the next 3 to 6 months it's going to outperform. I finally pulled staples out. I had it in as a defensive piece, but they just had been giving back too much this year. And, you know, it was costing me some performance by being in an underperforming sector. When you think about it, the process here, or at least the concept, is an easy one. Be in the right sectors at the right time, right? It should be done. As a simple goal, it doesn't get much simpler than that. Being able to do it, however, is obviously very difficult because that's what every portfolio manager does who's benchmarked to the S&P, and virtually nobody can do it. So the idea of being in the right sector is you've got to kind of be on top of the flows, where people are positioned, why are they positioned where they're positioned. And it really also comes down to trying to outsmart the players who are doing this and whether or not you really have an edge. I nibbled on financials a few months ago. I actually pulled it out, and this month they are outperforming a bit. And I had a reason to buy them, what I did from timing models. And I'll have to see, because I mean, right now financials are in the best place they've been since April, and I might have been wrong to have pulled it out. I'll see as the month progresses. Only once in the 36 months have I ever done an intermonth change, you know, a swap. So I generally, once a month, I update the portfolio. And usually it's just tweaking how much percentage I'm in the seven names. Again, it's not that often that we swap out actual sectors. But I do have the ability, as laid down in my own, let's call it, there is no formal mandate, but because I do this on the first of each month, I do have the ability to be somewhat tactical. And if something I put on isn't working, I can get out. And if something, you know, I need to take profits in, I can do. So I have, the way I set this 7-Eleven report up, I have more flexibility than a lot of portfolio managers who, let's say, if they decided they want to be long energy, they're long energy, and they may be long energy for, you know, 6 months, a year, or 3 years. I have more flexibility than that. But I really do, you know, closely monitor what we're doing and make sure that as best I can that what we're doing is the right thing. And of course, I can't tell you that I outperform every month. I don't. But for instance, last year, I outperformed 11 out of 12 months in 2022. This year, it's kind of more split down the middle, and I'm not materially ahead of the S&P this year. In fact, it's pretty much a wash. This has been one of the more difficult years, and I talk to portfolio managers all day long. I have not spoken to a portfolio manager yet who's ahead of his benchmark this year. So it's been a very difficult year, and moves have come that clearly were not expected. The fact that energy was the best performing sector last year and the worst performing sector this year certainly caught a lot of people off guard. You know, financials continuously getting hit with Silicon Valley and stuff, but they bottomed in July and they are starting to bounce. So again, that one I'll have to check up on. Tech, I've lowered exposure in going into August 1st. I kind of figured that tech had as much chance to outperform this month as it did to underperform. And that's the first time in months that I saw that. So I lowered and got closer to benchmark weighting on that. So, you know, it's really just putting all these pieces together. I have spreadsheets that I know what the quant model thinks. I see what, you know, the timing models do. I look at basic technicals. And of course, I'm an advanced technician, but I'll still look at some of the basic stuff, especially horizontal lines that you see, you know, are the sectors and trading ranges versus the S&P, or are they really directionally moving? And it's just putting them all together to come up with then kind of a simple formula of what I should do for each sector each month.
Well, Rick, maybe on the most simple side of all the factors is the fundamentals. And I'd love to ask you about, do they even matter anymore? Because it seems like when we've already noted some of these really high PE ratios and some of the overvaluations, when we look at earnings season, we just had Q2 earnings come in. People, you know, give it a quick look. They take a look at how companies' guidance is for the rest of the year. But it seems like most stocks really aren't trading based on their price to book value, price to enterprise, their price to earnings. It doesn't seem like the earnings matter as much. People, you know, analysts may cover it for a day or two and then people forget about it for the rest of the quarter. Do you put a lot of weight on earnings season, on the fundamentals of where companies are valued, or are you just more interested in where the momentum is going price-wise technically or some of the quant models? How do you factor in the fundamental side? Because people spend a lot of time on it and it doesn't seem like it always correlates.
So I'll look more at the fundamentals of the industry and everything going on in the marketplace than I will necessarily on individual stocks. Now, some of these sectors have literally two or three names that end up being 50% of the sector. So if you take a look at something like consumer discretionary, you're talking about Amazon and Tesla make up almost half that sector. So you've got to kind of look at what those companies are doing. But if I look at staples or healthcare, other than United Health, you know, it's those are much more evenly weighted, and they're not equal weighted, but because these are still large cap weighted indexes. But it really depends upon which sector I'm looking at. And the fundamentals I'm looking at often are the fundamentals generally to the sector, not so much to the individual companies, except in the case of, let's say, XLY, consumer discretionary, where those two names make up 50% of the sector. So if you're looking at consumer discretionary, you really have to kind of have an opinion on those names. If you look at communication services, you have to look at Google and Meta, because that's virtually 50% of that ETF. So it really depends on the ETF. And when I talk about looking at the fundamentals, I'm also talking about the macro fundamentals of the marketplace. What are interest rates doing? How much will higher interest rates affect the market? What's the likelihood that rates are going to challenge the U.S. 10-year 4.33% high made last year? You know, so I'm looking at also, when I talk about fundamentals, it's the fundamentals that exist in all the related factors for the market. Is crude oil going higher or lower? By how much? I just tanked up my car yesterday I was at Costco, and generally, you know, you expect Costco gas to be better priced than your local gas station, but it cost me $55 to tank up yesterday, and I still had about a quarter tank left. So, you know, I was paying maybe about $4.30, I think, for premium, which my car happens to take premium. So, you know, that's a big difference than the $3.50 I was paying several months ago. All those things get, I think about when I make my sector calls is, you know, what's going on in the fundamentals of everything. Where's, you know, CPI today? CPI came in, you know, as expected, but the market kind of ran to the upside today because they're thinking this gives a better chance for the Fed not to need to raise rates. But again, even looking at today's price action, you're already seeing a decent drop from those highs. So we're still, right now, we're in range trading. And I put this all into consideration when I think about where people positioned, how are they positioned, why are they doing what they're doing. And I can tell you from somebody who's been in this game at a pretty high level for four decades, most portfolio managers, when they're wrong, when they finally act to get out of what they're wrong, they inevitably do it at almost the perfect wrong time. So when somebody covers a bad short, they're often close to the high of covering a short. When someone finally faces the music that what they're long isn't the right thing to be long, and they finally decide to get out of it, it's often near a place that is a bottom. And being able to understand that and have models that can help you detect those movements and who's doing what. And of course, me talking to as many people on the street as I do too, all that helps me come up with the scenarios I do, not just for the 7-Eleven report, but for my weekly tactical trader report, which comes out Thursday. So later today, I'll be writing my weekly report. And the weekly report looks at, again, all the macro. We look at the U.S. 10-year. We look at credit spreads. We look at the dollar, gold, oil. And then we do a deep dive into the S&P. I give you a brand new ETF trading idea each week, too, and then review all the open positions we have name by name until we close it out. That's a weekly report that uses, again, all the information at hand in order to come up with the scenario that I'm looking at. And then you mentioned too, I do now a daily report, comes out, you know, every day. I do a daily, it's called a daily tip sheet. And we kind of do a deep dive into what's happening in the group for right now and over the next several days for those who are more trading oriented. So I have three written reports. One's a daily for short-term trading, one's a weekly kind of for swing trading out to several months. And then I have the monthly report, which the goal of the September report is to outperform the S&P over time. So I try to give all subscribers of different strategies and timeframes that they might want to trade or invest in a report that caters to them. And of course, I have my big institutional report, which is about a 20-page report that comes out every Sunday to my clients and reviews about 24 different major markets that all have bearing on the U.S. stock market.
So, Rick, I have one more question for you then. Since we're talking big picture here, we hear about a potential recession almost daily. People are saying we've avoided a recession. Some people are still saying, hey, it's just been pushed back, maybe into next year, 2024. What's your thought on this narrative, and does it impact your trading as you just went through the behavioral finance aspect of it all?
It does. So the big recession that was talked about in 2022 hasn't hit. We might have had smaller rolling recessions. Some will say we officially had a recession middle of last year when we had two negative, you know, quarters of GDP. I don't use that as definition of a recession. It's much more involved for me than a simple statement of two quarters in a row of negative GDP. But I don't think it's off the table. And I think the question that the biggest issue here will end up being interest rates and whether or not they spike higher. And, you know, the Fed has continuously said without fail, higher for longer. And the market, many in the market haven't wanted to believe it. Hedge funds have, because they've been more short bonds than I think it could be record. I think it's record setting their position being short bonds. So hedge funds have been completely leaning towards higher interest rates. The investment side of the investing community, the portfolio managers who run fixed income funds that aren't hedge funds, are more long bonds, thinking that rates are coming lower and that the Fed is done with what they need to do. If we take out 4.33, we could easily get to 4.75 to over 5%. And in that scenario, I don't see the stock market making new all-time highs like so many of the perma bulls are saying. I don't see it even hanging here at 4,500. If we even test the 4.33 high, I could easily see us down at 4,200 from the current 4,500. But if we get substantially higher interest rates, that I don't see how the stock market stays up. So it doesn't have to crash. We don't have to, demolish the market, but we will give back a decent amount of what we saw come since October.
Okay, Rick, we'll wrap it up here. Thanks for sharing some of your, I think, bigger picture thoughts on these markets and what you use to trade these markets in different sectors, how you isolate when swings could be happening. It's been a pleasure chatting with you over this really weird time for these markets, a bear market, and then this aggressive rebound and sector rotation. We'll be chatting with you again next month. And hey, we'll dive into some of the individual sectors as well and how you are seeing those set up as we start to exit summer. So Rick, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. We'll chat again next month.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.